This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. What Jay Powell says and what Jay Powell means, we shall try to decipher. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday today, the 21st day of June. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Google Maps says it's about a 15-20 minute drive from the Federal Reserve Building in Washington, D.C. up to Capitol Hill. And one imagines Fed Chair Jay Powell spent that time in the car this morning going over his opening statement and reviewing answers his staff had prepared to whatever questions lawmakers might come up with. Fairly standard bureaucratic stuff. Except this week's hearings, at which Powell is the guest of honor, the House Financial Services Committee today, Senate Banking tomorrow, were the first since Powell and the gang decided to skip a meeting and leave interest rates where they are. Powell being Powell, he stuck pretty much to the same script he used after last week's no rate hike meeting at the hearings today. But Powell also being Powell, he is clearly trying to tell us something, us being us, consumers, but also investors and lawmakers, too. But if he says the same thing all the time, what's he really trying to say? Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman drew the short straw.
There have been two messages coming from Jay Powell since last week's no rate hike Fed meeting. One, we're pausing to see if past rate hikes have done enough to fight inflation. Two, we're really serious about that inflation fight. We'll do whatever it takes to win. Former Fed Governor Frederick Mishkin doesn't see any big contradiction here. He says Powell needs to be clear because he got inflation so wrong in 2021 when he called it transitory, and it wasn't.
Once you actually make a mistake like that, it's even more imperative to lean in the direction of actually being tough.
But not everyone sees consistency in Powell's words. Dean Baker at the Center for Economic and Policy Research says there are two camps on the Fed: doves who think inflation's coming down enough, and hawks who believe inflation's not vanquished yet. He says Powell is caught between them,
trying to maintain consensus that, okay, we're going to hold, but we're going to leave open the option that we might well have further hikes. So you get this kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth.
It sure leaves me confused. Investors, too, says Quincy Crosby at LPL Financial.
The market is perplexed. Where does Powell fit in this equation in terms of the need to continue raising rates? And I think that's why you're confused, because he seems to meander into both monetary paths.
Powell has been clear that the Fed will act based on the actual inflation data, says Crosby, and that the hard work of getting inflation under control is mostly done, meaning slower and smaller rate hiking from now on. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Wall Street on this Thursday. Tech had a lousy day. Other sectors, less lousy. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Mitchell was just giving us the skinny on Jay Powell's testimony and how we all, well, I mean, you know, some of us anyway, hang on his every word. The word of the day during his House Financial Services Committee testimony today was inflation. No surprise. As of the latest reading, the Consumer Price Index for May, it shows the rate of inflation is slowing, but overall prices are still up. One place that consumers are feeling that a lot, food. Eating at a restaurant, 8.3% more expensive than it was a year ago. Groceries, 5.8% higher. Cereal and baking products rose at an annual clip of almost 11%. So, of course, we sent marketplaces Samantha Fields to a neighborhood bakery.
Hey, buenos dias.
Every other customer who walks into Blue Sky Bakery in Brooklyn seems to know the owner, Eric Gerza, and the manager, George Mason.
Hey, how are you? Oh my God, it's been a long time. How have you been?
Good.
Gerza opened Blue Sky Bakery 20 years ago, and Mason's been working with him the whole time.
We do everything here. Do the baking, take care of the front of the house, both of us.
They bake everything fresh every day, right in the back. Banana and pumpkin breads, raspberry walnut coffee cake, croissants, cinnamon rolls, and all kinds of muffins.
So we have a pumpkin apple blueberry today, then raspberry mango bran, and a carrot peach walnut.
The muffins are what bring most customers in.
Today, give me the cranberry apricot.
Okay.
I hope. Thank you.
A muffin at Blue Sky now costs $5.50. That's a dollar more than it was just a year ago. Gerza says he held off on raising prices for a long time, but eventually had no choice because all of his main ingredients had gone way up. Flour, for one.
Butter also was one of those big, it was $2 a pound up to $4 a pound, and now it's dropped back to about $3 a pound.
Then there's the price of frozen fruits, which they use a lot.
They went up and didn't come down. Raspberries, for example, I think they were somewhere around $3 a pound frozen. They are now at $5 a pound.
And it's not just the ingredients. It's also paper bags, coffee cups, insurance, wages. All of that factors in. Gerza says his wholesale customers, other cafes and stores that buy his muffins, were not happy with the price increases.
I don't think we lost any of them, though. I think they eventually realized that this is the way things are moving.
Regular customers who come into the shop have not really pushed back on the price increases, he says. But that doesn't mean they haven't noticed.
I mean, $5.50 seems like a lot for a muffin.
Chris Liu and his wife, Ann Lynn, live around the corner from Blue Sky.
You always just go back to when you were like a kid. And so I don't really trust my own judgment because I'm like, oh, muffins should be $1.50.
I remember muffins to be like $3.50 or something like that.
Lynn does most of their grocery shopping, and she pays close attention to how much everything costs.
I buy a lot of fruits. They went up a lot. Preserved product went up. Pasta went up a lot. I remember it was dried pantry pasta. It used to be $1.79, and now it's like $2.49 or something like that. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty crazy.
But even though they feel things getting more expensive, they haven't really changed what they buy. And now inflation has finally started to slow for all sorts of things, including food, which Lynn has also noticed.
After end of last year, it didn't go up that much anymore. So it's been a couple of months that it's been plateauing.
That's been the case at Blue Sky Bakery. After raising prices a few times last year, Eric Gerza says he hasn't raised them in 2023, at least not yet.
But time will come and we will also have to raise the retail and the wholesale prices again.
You see that in
Yeah, for sure.
You guys have a great day.
If and when that time does come, Gerza says, he thinks his customers will be understanding. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
What are you doing in the year 2154? I ask, hypothetically, clearly, because you'd have to be around that long to see the end of the gender gap in the global economy. That was the word today from the World Economic Forum's annual Gender Gap Report. Marketplace's Lily Jamali dug into it for us.
The World Economic Forum report covers a range of factors, including women's labor force participation, wages, and access to positions of power. And by that measure, the worst country in the world for women right now is Afghanistan. Not only does it rank dead last, it also backslid, says Sadia Zahidi, managing director of the forum.
Afghanistan has closed just over 40% of its gender gap. So essentially, women have less than half of the opportunities and resources that men have.
Some advanced economies lost ground, too. Take Japan, which Zahidi says has invested in trying to improve women's status.
But remains very stuck when it comes to ensuring that they're actually getting the return on that investment.
What unites many countries, rich or poor, where gender parity has languished, is a lack of child and elder care infrastructure that allows mothers to balance work and family.
It's extremely important because it puts a limit on what women can do in the labor market.
Ann York, professor at Meredith College, says the last 3 years here in the U.S., when so many women left the workforce, haven't helped.
The pandemic, unfortunately, has made things a lot worse than they would have been.
No country on the planet has achieved gender parity, but Iceland, Norway, and Finland are getting close. The U.S. ranks 43rd. That doesn't surprise Elise Gould, senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute. Even as women try to educate themselves out of the pay gap,
the average wage for women with advanced degrees is still lower than the average wage for men with only a college degree.
Meanwhile, the forum finds globally it'll be 2154 before we're on equal footing. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Companies from Apple to Zoom are making corporate climate pledges, promising to cut the amount of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases they put into the atmosphere in the course of doing business. But before companies can cut their emissions, they have to measure their carbon footprint in the first place. And that is driving the development of a relatively new profession, carbon accounting. Daniel Ackerman has that one.
The other day when Cooper Ellsworth stepped into a sweet green restaurant in Boston, he already knew what he was going to order.
I'm vegetarian, so I'll probably go for the hummus crunch salad.
See, Ellsworth knows a thing or two about this particular dish.
That's the lowest emissions salad at Sweetgreen.
The salad's footprint, just under a pound of CO2 equivalent. And Ellsworth knows this because it's his job. He's a carbon accountant at a firm called Watershed. Instead of dealing in dollars and cents, he deals in greenhouse gas emissions. My lunch order, by the way, a chicken pesto parm bowl.
I'm going to get a higher emissions salad. Is that okay with you? Yeah, totally fine.
As we wait for our orders, Ellsworth points to the massive refrigerator at the back of the store, full of carrots, spinach, and limes. A financial accountant might see that fridge as a $10,000 expense, but Ellsworth sees
electricity usage and refrigerant leakage. So those are the two main sources of emissions.
Ellsworth tallies this up for all of Sweetgreen's operations, from the shreds of Parmesan in my salad, way worse than hummus, by the way, right down to the commutes of the employees. Because the company says it's going to zero out its carbon footprint this decade. And it's not alone.
We're pretty busy. A lot of companies are looking for help.
Christina Wyatt is Chief Sustainability Officer at Persephone, which counts the climate beans for Citibank, Einstein Bros Bagels, and Bumble. And she says what those clients want is a standardized way to measure and report their carbon emissions. Because right now, corporate climate disclosures are all over the place.
It's sort of like if we were back in the barter system, it was difficult to clearly define whether a chicken was worth a bale of hay, right? We didn't have a common currency.
Carbon accounting firms aim to fix that. The best of them follow something called the Greenhouse Gas Protocol. It's international and basically the gold standard for measuring corporate climate impact.
That will pretty much be the accounting of the 21st century.
Pasha Madavi researches energy policy at UC Santa Barbara. And he says more and more shareholders and customers want hard data on companies' environmental performance. And the data needs to be airtight because
regulators are demanding that information.
Think carbon audits. The SEC this year is expected to mandate that public companies report emissions. That's because climate change poses financial risks to business. And all of this means that carbon accountants are in line for a payday.
Yeah, we're looking at tens of billions of dollars.
That's Ty Coleman's estimate of the total market size. He's co-founder of the carbon accounting firm Optera.
And that's just the accounting piece. The actual bigger play here is the work that needs to happen to decarbonize those organizations.
It may take time for the carbon accounting industry to go mainstream, but that was true for plain old financial accounting back in the day. Pasha Madavi from UC Santa Barbara says during the Great Depression, the government told corporate America it had to do a better job tracking and reporting its finances. Firms were not happy.
Like steel companies saying, we don't know anything about accounting standards. What are you asking us for financial documents information? Like, that's not what we do. But what did they do? They hired accountants.
And hey, we haven't had another Great Depression. We'll see what the carbon accountants can do about climate change. In Boston, I'm Daniel Ackerman for Marketplace.
Coming up,
it's the perfect cover for industrial espionage.
007, the corporate edition, straight ahead. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials off 102 today, 0.3%, 33,951 for the blue chips. The NASDAQ down 165, about 1.2%, 13,502. The S&P 500 fell 23 points, 0.5%, 43.65. We heard from Samantha Fields about the sticky costs of food. Looking at some of those stocks then, Tyson Foods up 1.3%. Kellogg lost almost 0.5%. The grocer Wise Markets rang down 0.5%. Winnebago, the motorhome company, reported disappointing earnings yesterday. Revenue fell by more than half due to a drop in sales and a rise in discounts. Winnebago stalled 1.3%. 3M, which stands for what? Come on, ticker symbol literally is 3Ms. What does it stand for? Make scotch tape, a bunch of other plastics and adhesives. Facing billions of dollars in lawsuits related to forever chemicals and microplastics, 3M down 0.8%. Today, bond prices fell as well. Yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 3.72%. You're listening to Marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Brizdal. The consumer vibe early to mid pandemic-ish was that we were buying goods, stuff, things with all the money we weren't spending on travel and eating out and entertainment. The 180 on that, the past 18 months or so, the shift to services from goods has been well documented. And it has put no small amount of pressure on the companies that ship and deliver all that stuff, especially FedEx. The company is dealing with another quarter of falling revenue, and it's in the middle of a restructuring to boot. Marketplace's Elizabeth Trovall has more on that one.
To understand what's happening with FedEx today, Stifel analyst Bruce Chan looks back to spring 2020.
Remember, you know, how hard it was to get toilet paper at the very beginning of the pandemic.
One of many supply chain related shortages that caused shippers to overorder. As they caught up, manufacturers and retailers were left with a glut of inventory that Chan says they're finally working down.
And that's been causing a lot of pressure on freight flows and freight volumes.
That's as FedEx is spending more on wages and equipment like forklifts, while people are choosing experiences over goods. But Deutsche Bank analyst Amit Mehrotra says as they get that out of their system,
and there's a better balance between goods and services spending, we will actually have a restock cycle later this year.
Filling inventory for holiday shoppers. FedEx can't blame their lackluster performance all on the economy.
When revenue is going down, it exposes a lot.
He says tough times have pressured FedEx to become more efficient. They plan to cut costs by $4 billion in 2 years. And there's new opportunities ahead for the company, says University of Pittsburgh's Prakash Mershandani, especially with small and mid-sized retailers like Shein.
They are grabbing a greater proportion of the market.
He says FedEx will be competing with UPS and others as retailers up their e-commerce game. I'm Elizabeth Trovall for Marketplace.
The relationship between China and the United States is complicated. It's complicated politically. It's complicated in its national security implications, and it's especially complicated in its economic contours. The complaints by each side about the other's economic transgressions are many. One of the oldest for the United States and for American companies is the theft of intellectual property. And those tensions now extend into the world of investments, with startups in particular. Marketplace's Sabri Benishour reports.
When he was an undergrad at UC Santa Barbara in 2011, Alon Rafael co-founded a startup called Femtometrics. It sells technology to computer chip makers that detects the tiniest of flaws.
It's the bleeding edge of the most advanced chips that are coming out that we are applicable to.
He eventually hired three engineers and sponsored their visas to work in the U.S. as Chinese nationals. And after a little while, one of them said he wanted to invest in the company.
One of the requests for the investment was to know the details of our patent portfolio.
The patents. Startups set up virtual data rooms where investors can view proprietary data and plans.
I didn't accept investment funds until he had already been working at the company for a term. I considered him a friend.
A friend he was not, apparently, nor were two other employees, as Femtometrics alleges in a lawsuit filed last August.
They absconded with hard drives and the technology.
They stole the technology, Rafael says, and fled with it to China. That was just the beginning.
Led by Chinese venture capital funds, set up a sister company with stolen technology in China and began to produce our technology and market to our customers from China.
The alleged copycat company also filed patents in China for the stolen technology, Rafael says. Shoshana Rafael, Alon's sister, is an attorney for Femtometrics.
The difficulty is that China is beyond the reach of the courts. So if we're successful, which we really think we will be, we're left with an injunction that has limited effect. It would restrict them to China at best.
The Femtometrics case is emblematic of a wave of alarm over Chinese investment currently rippling through the world of startups and venture capital in the U.S.
It's a very serious concern.
Andy Weber is a senior fellow at the Council on Strategic Risks and former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Nuclear, Chemical, and Biological Defense Programs.
Chinese-affiliated or owned VCs are seeking to acquire Western companies, oftentimes to obtain access to technologies in priority sectors.
priority sectors like advanced computer chips. The scale of China's industrial espionage effort is staggering, according to Michael Brown, a partner at Shield Capital and former director of the Defense Innovation Unit at the Department of Defense. Venture capital investing is one small slice of it, he says.
Over 250,000 people in the People's Liberation Army were focused on stealing IP and secrets, meaning commercial secrets that could be valuable for companies in China.
U.S. law can prevent foreign investors from taking a controlling stake in companies with sensitive technologies, but it doesn't apply to small investments of less than a 10% stake. Again, Andy Weber.
In essence, it's the perfect cover for industrial espionage.
Startup founders may not grasp the threat, Weber says, because the line between private sector and government in China is murky.
Unlike American companies, Chinese-owned companies are required by their government to support the military. It's called civil-military fusion.
Chinese venture capital firms are also required to support government goals of acquiring advanced technologies, according to Nate Pekarsik and Emily de la Bruyere, senior fellows at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies.
To raise a venture capital fund, investors in China have a requirement to explain their investment thesis in terms of the strategic emerging industries that tie to the long-run Chinese science and technology planning apparatus.
And they're not hiding it if you're looking at the Chinese sources, just to underscore that this isn't any kind of fear-mongering out of the potential concern. It's a very real goal.
Several Chinese investment groups did not return requests for comment. Not every Chinese venture capital firm is a conduit for industrial espionage, cautions Scott Kennedy, senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
There's probably a whole lot of Chinese venture capital firms that are just venture capital firms that are looking for technologies to invest in and support and making money.
But he says it may be hard to tell the difference. So American startups are caught in a bind. They're increasingly aware of the possible risks of Chinese investment. But in a rough market, they're also increasingly desperate for funding. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
Final note on the way out today. One more quick thing about Jay Powell's testimony this morning. I don't know if you saw it a couple of weeks ago, but there was a picture of the Fed chair at a Dead and Company concert making the rounds, Dead and Company being a successor of sorts to the Grateful Dead. Anyway, this head of the U.S. Central Bank, a deadhead? It is true, and now it's in the congressional record, Congressman Wiley Nickel of North Carolina asking the questions.
How was the show? Did you like it?
Oh, it was terrific. What can I say? So it was great. I've been a Grateful Dead fan for 50 years. So,
we're leaving here, though, is your moment of economic context. We began with a central bank. We will end with a central bank. The Bank of England meets tomorrow, and the smart money, having seen that inflation over in the UK came in this morning at 8.7%, smart money would be on the B of E raising its key interest rate again tomorrow for the 13th time in a row. Let me just say, though, do not bet on what central banks are doing, please. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Dorado, and Becca Weinman. And if you must bet on what central banks are doing, consult your own financial advisor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.